We are we kind of finished Shin Chaf Beis last week, but there's a couple of crumbs left over, that we need to I think we should pick up on. So, so number one. So there, the truth is, maybe turn to page. Maybe turn to page 4 first, the first page of Shulchan Aruch, which I think is page 4. So there was this, the Ramah that we concluded with at the end of last week was this long Ramah that sort of lays out a couple of the, sort of, takes everything into the way we do things nowadays, he says. First thing he says is that we don't eat, that nobody eats the challah, even though there seems to be a pretty decent way, certainly in Chutz La'aretz, to be able to consume the challah, the actual part that we separate by Kohen Katan or something, or somebody who goes to the mikvah. Still the Ramah says that our minhag is not to do it. And then he said that even though the Gemara describes taking off two pieces, right, one piece to burn and one piece to give to the Kohen, depending on where you are in the world, it would be one would be larger than the other. So that also we don't do any day anymore. Rather, we just take off a little bit and burn that. Right, that's that right in the middle of that Ramah, where it's quoted from the Ma'aril. Then he goes on and says, and if you eat the challah even outside of Eretz Yisrael, you would make a bracha on it, which is a little bit odd. I thought he just said that we don't eat it. So we came up last week with a case where potentially you would eat it. I mean, first of all, the Ramah might just be saying that, well, let's say you don't follow the minhag. If you don't follow the minhag, so maybe, the Ramah is sort of basing on what the minhag is in Ashkenaz. But he is also adding on sometimes to the Shulchan Aruch. I don't know if the Shulchan Aruch elsewhere discusses the bracha rishona you would make on achilas challah. So the Ramah is slipping that in. And then finally he concludes by saying, and you are, the last couple lines here, v'yish omrim k'shesorfen hachala osin la hesek bifnei atzma, d'yisrael asur lihenas mimen. It says, when you burn the chala, it should get its own fire, because the Yisrael is not allowed to benefit from it. V'noagim l'hashlicha l'tanur kodem sha'ofen apas. And the minhag is to throw it into the oven before we bake the bread. So that's what we finished off with last week. So, first of all, why are we burning it exactly? What are we solving? What is the challenge that we're solving by burning the challah? So the challah, we assume, is challah tameya. One can make a case you're not allowed to burn it. I mean, you're not allowed to just get rid of truma that is kasher. So you're not allowed, so why are we doing that here? So the assumption is that it's not just challah, it's challah tameya. So it's the same as truma tameya. That's so therefore, that's why we would go ahead and burn it, because we don't want to, therefore it's allowed to be burnt, you're allowed to just get rid of it, and therefore we want to get rid of it. Now, in addition to that, if you're Yisrael at least, you're not allowed to get Hana from it. So how do you solve that problem of getting Hana from it? So the Ramah seems to be saying here that you make it its own fire, and that should be before you bake the bread. So what are those two, why are you making it its own fire? So the concern is that, I guess, it shouldn't be fuel for the rest of the bread. Meaning, if you're going to then use it for the as coals or as something for the rest of the bread that you're going to put in, so then that's going to be considered to be hana. So therefore, we separate it and have it its own, being its own fire. And then he adds in, and we do it before we bake the bread. Now, why do we do that? Why do we do it before we bake the bread? So the concern there is that we don't want it around. If you lay it around, so then all sorts of strange things could happen with the challah dough, as perhaps we'll see some examples that show up in the next amud. So therefore, we just want to get rid of it right away, and that generally is roughly the minhag. I mean, nowadays in our restaurants that are taking challah on a regular basis by the mashgiach or by the owner. So like a pizza store where there's a frum owner, so he separates the challah from the batch of dough, and we'll talk about wrapping it in a second, and then he puts it into the oven, and he burns it in a sort of a separate spot in the oven, and then the rest of the pizza, and then he continues on with the rest of his day. So that is the standard practice. Now, if we go back to the first page of the notes, You see, the Darkei Moshe actually adds on a little bit here. I mean, you could read the Ramah as, the simplest way to read the Ramah is, we burn it before we put in the rest of the stuff, plus we don't want to get any benefit from it. So if we take a look at the Darkei Moshe, so on the first page of the notes, I think, is page Ayin Aleph, where this section of the Ramah, well, the Darkei Moshe, right? The Darkei Moshe is the same person. It's Rav Moshe Esterlis. That's just as the Beis Yosef forms the basis for the Shulchan Aruch. So too the Darkei Moshe forms the basis for the Ramah, not as tightly as the Beis Yosef is, but still. And therefore, and it's expanded upon there. So if you take a look on the left column, so there he says, Kasav Mar Yo, which is, I forgot who that is, losing me right now. He says, this is the full quote that the Ramah is quoting from. The Chalat Tzarech Lasos La Hesek Bifnei Atzma, the Yisrael Asr Lihenos Yimena, right? It needs to be a separate burning, because the Yisrael is not allowed to get enough from it. And that's also what it says in Tosos and Maseches Pesachim. Ve'ein Noagin Kein Bizman Hazeh. But we are not knowing like that, bizman hazeh. She'ena chala doraisa, because chala is not doraisa anymore. Rather what? Rak mashlichim osu letanwar kodem she'ofen bopas. Rather, what do? We throw it into the oven before we bake the bread. So while it sounded like, from reading the Ramah, that he's presenting like a chumrah here. Right, that the chumrah is that, right, we don't want to get hanah from it, so therefore we put it in the oven before putting anything else in, and we do it before we put anything else in, and that's the chumrah we don't want in it at the same time. Comes the Ramah here, and it seems to be the Darkei Moshe seems to be spelling it out not as a kula, not as a chumrah, but as a kula, meaning it is we don't want it to have its own we can't have its own burning because we're not allowed to get hanah from it. But we are makil to put it in before we bake the other bread. So what is the kula there? I mean, what would I have thought otherwise? What is the concern? So there are a few concerns that we could have here, right? If we throw the bread in, so for, you know, pre tinfoil, before the invention of tinfoil, right? So you're throwing the bread in. Where's the bread going, right? The bread is just going into the oven, right? The most comparable, probably modern day pizza ovens is probably the most comparable thing to their ovens, right? That it's just sort of a tray and you throw stuff in and take it out. So it seems like in the Ramah's day, what is he advocating? He's saying you could put it in the same oven, you could put it in the same place, just do it before you put in the rest of the bread, right? Implying, right? And now you start hearing that it's a kula, meaning in theory, this challah, if you imagine it is treif. Let's say you have it would be some kind of mitzvah to get rid of the, you have a piece. You get meat that with every hamburger, with every hamburger comes a non-kosher hamburger. So how do I get rid of the non-kosher hamburger? So Shulchan Aruch says, oh, I got a good idea. Just put in the oven before you put in the rest of your burgers, right? So that's crazy, right? Our wives are not like that very much, right? that would not work. How are you doing? So all of a sudden with challah we do that. How do we do that with challah? How do we put it into the oven, right? And there's two concerns. Number one is the concern about anytime we put things in the oven, the concern about recha, about the smell, the concerns about blios, but I can't believe I'm forgetting it. The moisture coming off that goes into the walls of the of the oven, right? What?
Rotev.
The rotev is sauce, but So there's that concern, right? And then there's the other concern about the dough going on specific spots of the oven, meaning like right again. Imagine a pizza oven, right? So the floor of the pizza oven is the it's the same floor. So you're putting the dough, and then the dough burns up, and then you put in the pizza, and then you take it out, I guess, and then you put in the pizza. Are you putting the pizza on the same surface that the dough was on, right? Yeah. So according to what we're reading here, Darkei Moshe and the Ramah, he's saying, yeah, that's okay. So and now we understand the Ramah not as a chumrah, but rather as a kula, right? Yeah, but it's not really not that big a deal anyways. We're only talking about chalas chutz la'aretz, And as we'll see more in Simen Shin Chaf Gimel, this becomes a much bigger issue in the next in the next step. But the Chalas Chutz La'aretz is sort of given a title of Ein Ikro Min HaTorah, that as opposed to Chala in Eretz Yisrael, where it's assumed like that is basically the Din D'Oraisa, we're just only doing it on the level of the Rabbanan, the Chala in Chutz La'aretz is like Kulo Durabanan. It's just like an entire entity of rabbinic law, and therefore that's why there are kulas from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. So this is perhaps an example of that, where you have the right to be Mekel, because it's sort of it's all in general kind of a Zecher Li'alma. So that is that is one thing. Another
What do we do today? What do we do today at home?
So nowadays we advocate using wrapping it up, and that makes it a little, you know, that makes it better, right? If you wrap it up, so then if you wrap it up in tinfoil, so then you are avoiding the contact, right? It's not, you're not actually making contact. So modern day poskim have added on to that and said, well, you know, like this is all kind of strange. But. You know, that sort of takes advantage of a modern invention. I mean, I'm not sure what what would you have advocated, what would you have used back in the day. So nowadays to avoid that concern of blios going into the oven and then coming out, so we wrap it in tinfoil. Now, okay, but what was the Ramah saying? So very good. So nowadays we have this modern day invention called tinfoil that gives us a cheap way of separating from the dough to the oven itself. But before that, so how do you get out of that problem? So probably, especially if you, again, once again, picture a pizza oven, right? So pizza ovens get up to 800-900 degrees, or a matzah oven gets up to 800-900, you know, even higher, probably 1400 degrees. So it's sort of there, as long as you take it out, so that probably already is the shear of Liban Gamor. So probably what the Ramah is relying on is that you can put it down on the surface, and then you take it off, and by the time you put the bread in, Liban takes place, so to speak, and therefore it's, so to speak, koshered already on its own. That might be the way that the Ramah understood it. But nowadays we do it in we actually wrap it in tinfoil. In fact, I have in front of me, I meant to put it in the source sheet. Maybe I'll send it out next time. But I have my Star K Kosher Guidelines and Mashgiach Handbook right over here. So on there, they have a section of policy documents. So the Sreifas Chala B'Tanur document. So it's Hebrew and English, but he has here, Rav Heinemann stated that his proper way to burn chala is to flatten out the piece of dough and wrap it in foil and then burn it. Why are we flattening the dough? So flattening the dough makes it burn easily, right? If you just put in a dough ball, so the inside never actually burns. So it should not be placed directly on a burner or inside the oven. Rather, there should be something separating between it and the surface it's laying on. Foil or a dedicated pan are sufficient, right? So in the Ramah's day, he would say use a dedicated pan. But again, I'm not sure you need having a dedicated challah pan might be a little bit of a risky thing to have as well.
You burn it at the second time, or you put it in before today?
No, before. So they separate it, they put it in. The truth is, in our pizza, when you look at pizza ovens, I remember as a kid looking in Shimon's and Benji's and wondering why they had all of those doors, right? When you look at a pizza oven, there's usually four doors. And I was wondering, why are they only using two of the doors? So the reason is, now that I get a first close-up looks at pizza ovens now, only two of the places are compartments you actually bake in. The other two are access to the burners, right? So the burner doesn't actually, the burner for the oven doesn't actually, right? The pizza doesn't actually come in contact with fire. Rather, the heat is really in that compartment. So when you look at a stack, a pizza oven stack, right? So the bottom door and the third to bottom door are both, is where like the burners are, and the second from the bottom and the top one are where you actually put the challah. So the minhag of our guys is to put the challah in those lower compartments, not in the compartment itself where the pizza is. And then he just leaves it there. He leaves it there to burn for the night. Yeah. Right. He puts it next to the burner, which isn't used for pizza. It's probably a universal kosher pizza store practice, I would bet. That's the standard practice. Now, in many of our establishments, if they are Jewish, that works in a pizza store where in like Shalom Pizza, where Gavriel Pollack is there in the morning, to separate the challah, or in Slices and Rolls, so Eli Etkar is there to separate the challah. But in larger places or in situations where the Jewish owner is not necessarily there, or like a factory setting. So we certify there is a certain pretzel factory in the Philadelphia area that is not officially certified by us, but we sort of do special runs there. And that is actually owned by a Jew. He happens to be a Jewish guy. It's actually one of the challenges in giving it a hechsher. That's right. How do you exactly certify a pretzel store that, you know, unless he's willing to sell it for Pesach. But there I can't rely on him to be mafrish challah. So what a lot of Mr. Nabisco is probably not Jewish, but a larger industrial bakery, if it's Jewish owned. So what do you do there about challah? So we'll probably keep coming back to this issue, but the kashrus organizations use something called the tevel dough system, either tevel dough or matzah system. So what happens there? So what we do is in the beginning of the year, we separate, or really right after Pesach, the year sort of goes around Pesach, and then there's another interruption in the middle, which we'll get into at a later point, but there is, we have them separate a large dough ball. So, like basketball size or so, right? And they separate the dough ball, it's raw, and we have them, wrap it up and put, I tell them to put it all, put in kosher tape, wrap it all around in kosher tape, put a sign on it saying, if you touch this dough ball, on your life, right, your job's in jeopardy, whatever. And I tell them to stick it deep into the freezer someplace and just leave it there, right? And then what we do is that on a ideally daily basis, although technically it doesn't actually need to be done on a daily basis, there's a paragraph that you could say remote, that the Mashkiach says remotely. So I actually, if you notice me during davening, looking at my phone sometimes, right, I'm trying to do that paragraph. And that paragraph is essentially declaring that dough ball is, we are separating the northernmost point that is not yet challah is hereby, we're taking a small amount of it. Let me pull the language out right here. Right, the paragraph goes, whatever the northernmost side in such and such a place, we are hereby separating the smallest amount possible. Where is it? A chiluk echad kisaora, right? A small amount, like a saora, a barley amount, and that is hereby the challah that we're separating for whatever is going to be baked in this factory today. So that's the way we do it. So and that way, little by little, that big dough ball gains kedushas challah over the course of the season, and then you have to burn it before Pesach, right? Because actually, one of the chumras of challah is.
Why do you take the northernmost part?
Well, it could be the easternmost part, but the text happens to say the northernmost part. Right? It has to be the highest, you have to just be designating it little by little, sort of across the dough ball, as to what becomes, what starts having kedushas challah. So that's.
Consistent, probably.
What?
You have to be consistent.
Right. I mean, the truth is you don't even need to be consistent because it's the northernmost. So I could say northernmost, and next I could say easternmost, and then I could say northernmost again, and it's northernmost that's not challah, whatever. But that's what the text says. The northernmost spot that is not yet challah, that becomes the size of a seora, right? That becomes the challah for the day off of whatever dough is made over the course of the day. So that's the way it's done. That's one method is using the dough ball method. The other method out there is actually the tevel matzah method, where Instead of using a dough ball, you take a box of the Streitz factory under the managership of Danny Kaplan does a Tevel Matzah run every year where they specifically aren't mafrish challah. They call it, whether it should be called Tevel or not is actually a subject to, is somewhat debated, but that's just what we call it. They're called Tevel matzahs, where they dafka aren't mafrish challah from it, and then they send those, then those matzahs are available to kashrus agencies to then to use instead. Meaning some prefer matzah, some prefer dough balls. They'll get into reasons why one might be preferable over the other, and rather than using dough balls, they just use these Tevel matzahs. So I actually have a box of Tevel matzahs in the basement, but the truth is it really only works for that year. So I really just throw them in the garbage at this point because they're not going to be either throw them in the garbage or be mafrish challah on them and then use them.
It's the same formula, or you actually physically move?
The same formula. The formula itself has a distinction between matzah tevel or isis. You fill in the blank in the whatever you're actually using. So there's a choice. When I brought this up to our rabbanim, they preferred doing matzahs over using matzahs over dough balls, but it's not by matzah. It's the same thing. He's saying that, you know, the northernmost crumb of matzah that has not yet been mafrish is going to be used. So both of those, that is the custom. So just for our purposes, okay. So now what happens to that dough ball? So the halacha is, so in theory I should be able to, I could separate a really nice large thing and keep it for years. The only problem is that challah is usher to sell to Goyim. So if it's before, right? So what do you do? It's chametz, right? The reason to use matzah might be to avoid this issue, right? But if it is chametz, right? So you have to get rid of it before Pesach. And how do you get rid of it? So, well, I can't sell it to a guy because I'm not allowed to sell challah to a guy. It has kedusha to it. So what do I do with it? So part of the problem is that this thing is completely frozen rock solid by this point, and it takes about 4 days to defrost, right? That's one challenge. The other challenge is to actually go ahead and burn it, right? You can flatten it out completely. Right? It's not the easiest thing to burn, especially in the 2 or 3 days leading up to Pesach when the Mashiach is going crazy with plenty of other things. So what the minhag essentially has become to, you could burn it. The truth is, I think at House of Kosher where we have this system, I think he burned it. I think he took a blowtorch and just burned it himself. But in theory, you can throw it out, right? So is that, so what's that issue? Is that okay? Is there a reason that we're specifically looking to burn it? Or is, you know, just getting rid of it, throwing it out, is that considered to be sufficient? So what exactly are we solving by this burning or this getting rid of it? What is the issue here? So I think on page 4 is a Gemara from Masechet Shabbos. So the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Chaf Hei. Here we go. So Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Chaf Hei Amar Aleph, is discussing some of the halachos here of Chalas Chutz La'aretz. Right, and it says the following thing towards the top. He says, Amar Rav, right, 4 lines from the top. Kashem shemitzvah lisruf hakachim sheyitnitmu. Just as there's a mitzvah to burn kachim that became tameh, kach mitzvah lisruf as a truma shenitmeh. So too, it is a mitzvah to burn truma that became. And this is just the connection to that Gemara, that while it is being burnt, you're actually allowed to get hana from it. So that's the statement there. So it seems like it's talking about burning it. It seems to actually be compared to kachim. Now kachim, we've come across plenty of talk. We see what do you do with kachim that became pasul? So it needs to be burnt, right? That's explicitly in the Torah that kachim itself needs to be burnt. So here it says, oh, just as kachim that's not usable is burnt. So to truma that's not usable is going to be burnt. So Rashi here says on the first of the skinny lines, Rashi says, "Es truma shenitmes de dama lekodesh." The ode mishum takala. He says, what are we doing with the truma that is tameh? So Rashi says, we're burning it. Rashi says, why? A, because it's similar to hektish, right? And just as korbanos get burnt, so too, challah gets burnt. Right? That's answer number one of Rashi. Answer number two of Rashi is viod mishum takala, because of a takala. What does takala mean? Right? Takala means a disaster. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Right, because of a problem, because of a disaster, because we're concerned. So what's Rashi's answer here? So does Chala Temeya need to be burnt? So, well, if we want to compare it to Kachim, yes. If you're just trying to avoid a problem, so then you don't necessarily need to burn it. You just have to get rid of it in a way that it will never get picked up, right? So if I take dough and just throw it into, and put it in the backyard, so that's not necessarily avoiding that problem. So there still could be a takala that will come at that point. That could still lead to some kind of real problem. It's not necessarily the same issue when it comes to other things that we just need to get rid of, like by Shemitah, when people got Shemitah produce in their house by accident that they weren't going to be able to use. So they call, what do I do with it now? So, whatever, throw it in the backyard, let nature take its course. Because throwing it directly into the garbage is a problem, because you're being mevaze shvius. Here, you're not necessarily so concerned about the bizoy here. Here the problem just is that if it gets out there, so then you're concerned that it might be usable by something going on. So that's actually Rashi's answer. Tosfos happens to disagree. Tosfos kacha tametzuva lisrof esatruva. Tosfos here says mishum delo lisa lidei katakal. He quotes Rashi as saying, because we're concerned about what it could be. But then he says, but I don't think so. He says, no, I think you actually, dafka, are supposed to go ahead and burn it. Yes, dafka is supposed to go ahead and burn it. So now, bringing it back to this, so what do we do? So that's why we recommend burning it, right? We recommend taking it and putting it into our ovens and things like that. By the way, minhug in the gross house is that when we separate challah, so we do burn it, right, because in accordance with the minhag here, but we still are concerned that it's not completely burnt or the inside stuff doesn't always get burnt. So the minhag gross is actually that we burn it and put some soap on it and stuff, so that way it becomes not usable anyways, and that avoids the takala issue as well. So in these types of places where they have these big challah dough balls that are laying around, and it becomes very difficult to burn. So probably, and this is what Rabbi Cohn has in his sefer over here. So we can be somech on Rashi, and rather than burn it, just figure out a way to get rid of it in a way that it will no longer be usable and accessible by any people or animals going forward. Okay, so that I think takes us pretty much to the end of Simen Shin Chaf Gimel, Shin Chaf Beis. I wanted to just point out here. All right, so there is a Pisri Tshuva here on the bottom, right? What's the issue here? So the Rama here says, "V'yeh shomer kesasor fenachala osin lehesek b'fnei atzma di Yisrael aser lihenos mimena," because a Yisrael is not allowed to benefit from it. So the Pisri Tshuva here says, "Oh." So take a look at that Nod Vihuda. Now I realize I forgot to put the Nod Vihuda in the source sheet, but Simon Yoredeya Reish Aleph and Madura Tinyana, that is the famous Nod Vihuda when it comes to Hilchos Afrashas Chala. That was where we talked about a week or two ago, the distinction, that's where he comes up, where what he himself labels as a big Chiddush, which I came up with, where he says that there's a different shear necessary for taking challah as opposed to giving challah. That when you take challah, meaning when you remove something, maybe that's allowed with a very small amount. When you give challah to the kohen, it has to be kidei nesina. It has to be a sufficient amount that actually is something worthwhile giving. But here in the beginning of the of that tshuva, he says, he raises the question between why is it that over here we're saying that what did he say here? Right, that you could burn it before you use it. But he says when it comes to truma later on, he says the shiura b'chol shehu shehi omedes l'sreif v'nisa l'chol kohen shiur tzeva kohen rishai l'kaima. Right here we are makbid. Here we try to get rid of the challah before we go ahead and cook all the bread, as opposed to by truma. So in Hilchos Truma later on, Simin Shin Lamed Gimel, right, ten simanim from now, there he says that you give it to the kohen and the kohen holds on to it until he gets around to using it. Now even bizman hazeh, meaning the kohen potentially could use. Truma Temeya is usable by is mutter bahana to a kohen that is tame, right? In fact, I remember several years ago seeing a blog post from Nassan Slifkin saying that good news, we found a buyer for all the animals at the his museum, and he's like, why am I selling all of the animals? People like seeing them and things like that. He says, well, we found a buyer who happens to be a Kohen. And if he is a Kohen, so then we can feed the animals Truma Temeya, because then the Kohen is getting Hana from the Truma Temeya. So we sold all, and I've heard as well that the Biblical Zoo, where I've never been in Israel, but the Biblical Zoo in Israel is also owned by a Kohen, or all the animals are owned by a Kohen, and therefore they use Truma Temeya to feed all the animals in the Biblical Zoo. So he says, why is it that by challah we seem to be makbid to get rid of all of it right away, as opposed to truma, where we tell the kohen, yeah, just keep it around until you have enough, and then you can burn it at that point and get enough from it that way. So he says, he suggests the difference is when it comes to truma has a shear. Whether he says not necessarily the truma itself, but meiser. Trumas Meiser, right? A lady is supposed to get a tenth, so he's supposed to give a tenth of that to the Kohen, so it actually is an amount that is going to the Kohen. So once there is an amount that is going to the Kohen, so therefore there's already something that's legitimate for him to keep around and to use at an appropriate time, as opposed to Challah, where there really is no shear. Even though we say the minig is to give a kezias, still there's really not much of a shear, so therefore the minig is to, therefore we just tell people with Challah, just get rid of it, as opposed to Truma Temeya, where we say that the Kohen is permitted to keep it around. Okay, so that's what the Pesukei Tshuva is alluding to here at the bottom of the end Shin Chof Gimel base.
This Truma Temeya in Israel, I mean, is there so much of it?
Yeah, well, all the farms. When you go through Machane Yehuda and at top of all the fruit things, so on the Tuda of all of them, it says Lo Chashash, and there's an acronym that they use. Truma Meiser Tev. Maybe Tevel Orla. I remember there's an acronym that's on all the Tudas. Right? So what's going on there, right? The Kashrus agency is overseeing that Trumas and Maisus is taken care of at the farm, right? So if they're taking care of it at the farm, so you never see it, but where does all that stuff go? So apparently it goes to the Biblical Zoo.
But why is it Tumma? I guess you make it Tumma.
The assumption is that if a farmer is using it, then it's Tumma. Or the coin is tame, meaning one way or the other, the coin is not allowed to have it. So I guess you're right. You probably need to right. Somehow, how exactly does it? Okay. We'll get up to Trumas as well. What exactly are the rules and regulations for ensuring its Tuma capacity? We'll have to get up to that.
Wow.
Okay. So so in Simin Shin Chav Gimel, so. It's sort of a very large. I'll try to nip around the edges tonight, and then next week we'll get a little bit more in depth in the middle. So there's a big the big lumdus in Hilchos Challah. One of the big lumdusha issues is what exactly is the status of the dough before challah is taken. So when it comes to most mitzvos tluyos ba'aretz, so the term that we use is tevel. Right, so tevel is food that did not yet have trumas and maisers that were mafresh from it. So is that going to be the same here? Or another alternative is that no, tevel is a term used for trumas and maisers. So when it comes to challah, it's kind of like it's a taruvus. It's like a mixture that there is challah in it that has not yet been taken. But Okay, so that's like one of the things that are floating out there. So what is discussed in Shin Chav Gimel, and there's actually only one sif here, though it happens to be very long, but the main thing, practical issue, is talking about when it gets mixed in, or, and only, if you look in the title in the Shulchan Aruch, Shin Chav Gimel, Chala Durabana. So this is actually only discussing the dinim of Chala Durabana, meaning Chala of Chutzal Aretz, where we are very makil about it anyways. So we should go back to the tour. So in the tour, which I guess is on page 2, I think, in the tour sheets. So in Shin Chav Gimel, Sif Aleph, so the tour says here, Kol Chala Shehi Midrabanan, Nitenes Afil Kohen Ama'aret. So he says, if the Chala is only Durabanan, it can be given, and now this is, again, assuming that you actually give it to a Kohen. We don't do that, but it could be given even to a Kohen Am Ha'aretz. Could even be given to a Kohen Am Ha'aretz. What do you mean, even a Kohen Am Ha'aretz? So at first glance, it's like, well, probably because we have some chashash with other things. You got to give it to a Kohen who knows what he's doing. But that's not actually the case. If you look here in the Prisha, so the Prisha explains, he says, Ratzel Lomer She'ikra D'Rabanan, K'gon Chalas Chutz La'aretz, meaning when it's Ikra D'Rabanan, a term we used before, as opposed to Chalas of Eretz Yisrael, which is really Doraisa, but it's only Chayiv on a level of Durabanan Bizman Hazeh. Right? That's Aleph. But then he continued, but the base here, in the Prisha here, is Afil L'Koin Amaretz Lafuke Matnos Kahuna, as opposed to other gifts of the Kohen, Shenisbar Le'el Simen Samach Aleph, which is earlier in Simen Samach Aleph. What is in Yoredeya Simen Samach Aleph? So we really only began our studies of Yoredeya on Simen Pei Zayin, right? That's where Basar V'Chalav, Hilchos Basar V'Chalav begin. So what is Simen Samach Aleph? So Samach Aleph is Hilchos Matnos Kahuna. So there are various matanos that are given to the Kohen, which are still really applicable to Zman Hazeh, and it's somewhat questionable why we don't do this. But every time you shecht an animal, so the maw and the shoulder, there's a couple of pieces of meat that are always supposed to go to the Kohen, are still applicable to Zman Hazeh, and actually has nothing to do with Tumah V'Tara, right? It should be applicable to today, right? I think I mentioned before, right? My brother-in-law, Danny Kaplan, has always had the idea of setting up a bed and breakfast where he's a Kohen, where he could get everybody's meat donations and get free meat, and it just has to be owned by the Kohen. It doesn't have to be eaten by the Kohen. So as long as, and then he could get all, just as Nathan Slifkin could get all the Truma Temeya, and as long as the animals are owned by a Kohen, he can own a bed and breakfast, get all the meat, and then give it to whoever he wants. So he'll have a cheap meat supply for his store. So there, apparently, in Shulchan Aruch it says, you should specifically try to give it to a Kohen Talmud Chacham, or Kohen Chaver. Right, so there it says Shenosu l'chachila dafka l'koin chaver midichsiv. That's based on a pasuk divrei amim l'man yichseku b'toras Hashem, to strengthen the Torah Hashem. So in a way, this is like a reward for the Kohen's value as a rebbe, as a talmud chacham who's teaching Torah and things like that. So the Prisha says, yeah, that's a din specifically there, because there's a pasuk saying that the matnos kahuna should go to a kohen who's a talmud chacham, because that strengthens Torah and things like that. But here there's no such mention. So therefore there's no real impetus to give the challah to a talmud chacham kohen, a chaver kohen, rather than a am ha'aretz kohen. Fine. But then the Torah continues on and says, ve'ena toveles shemutter lechol me'apas ulafrisha acharkach. He says, and it's not tevel. What do you mean it's not tevel? Because in theory, it's permissible to eat the bread and then to separate the challah afterwards. Okay, and that is the big chiddush that he's talking about here, right? That you can separate the bread, you can eat first, and whatever is left over, and say, oh, the leftover stuff, that is going to be challah. Why would I ever do that? So this comes up actually in Maseches Beitza, right? Maseches Beitza and Hilchos Yaltif. So the Beis Yosef here on the bottom line in the Beis Yosef, there he says, Ve'ena tovela shemutu lechol me'pasul afrisha achar kach, b'perakama de Beitza. What's going on over there? So Amar Shmuel there says, Chalas Chutz La'aretz. Again, different halacha. Chalas Chutz La'aretz versus Eretz Yisrael, they're like different laws. But Ochel v'holeich v'achar kach mafrish. We eat it. You can eat it. And then you can be mafrish later. Now, why would this come up? So this is in Maseches Beitza, right? It's in Hilchos Yontif. So what happens on Yontif? On Yontif, all of a sudden you're eating and realize, I gewalt, right? I didn't separate my challah yet. So if we have, with most things, tevel, right? If you're eating salad and then you say, I gewalt, I forgot to take off, I forgot to take off meiser from the tomatoes, right? So you have a real problem then. You're not allowed to be mafresh trumus umeiseros on Shabbos. Right? Why not? Why can't that be mafresh trumus umeiseros on Shabbos? So that's considered to be a form of tikkun mana. There you're like fixing up the fixing it up. So it sounds like it should be the same thing when it comes to challah, right? I'm hereby fixing it up. So Shmuel says challah schutzlar, it's ochel v'holeich, you can eat it, and then be mafresh later. Why? Again, this is only a chutzlaretz. So the assumption is because of a rush, perish Rashi, ochel kol apas umeshayir ba kedei chala umafrisha ba'achrona, and you leave off enough for chala, and then you mafresh it later. This is v'lo nehira. Deim kein havalei lemeimar umeshayir kedei chala. Right? Then would say you leave off chala. Rather, elamashra tzarech l'shayir yoser mitei chala. Rather, you leave off more than chala in order to be mafresh chala later on. Mishum devinon reishis sheshirah nikarim. Right? Umi umukaf vaday lo beinon midasharin and ochav aholich v'achar kach mafresh v'chein kasas mag. So what are we saying here? We're saying that which I'm doing hafrusha later on. I mean, you're not doing hafrusha now, right? Rather, you're doing hafrusha later, and the hafrusha later is covering what I'm eating now. Isn't that a problem of it has to be in proximity? He says, well, apparently not. Apparently we're not machmir that everything be together in the same place, right? Because part of it is already eaten, and you're being mafrish later on. Isn't it a problem that you're eating tevel? So it seems that the approach of the tour is that, no, that's, we don't consider, that's not tevel. Meaning it's considered bread which has not yet had hafrashas challah taken off. That's the thing. There's a mitzvah to be done, and generally speaking, we won't go ahead and eat it before the mitzvah is done. But technically speaking, it's really just a mitzvah that needs to be done, sort of outside the realm of making the food kosher, so to speak. Right? The Rabbi Cohen here, David Cohen, compares it to what's it called? To kisui hadam. Right, kisui adam, covering the blood of animals, of chickens after they're shechted. Right, so yes, there's a mitzvah kisui adam. What if you don't do kisui adam? Is there anything wrong with the chicken? No, you just missed the opportunity for the mitzvah. So the same thing would be, and again, this is only chalas chutzal aretz, not in Eretz Yisrael, but chalas chutzal aretz, that's going to be the din, that you can eat it on yontif and then save the rest to be, and then save a little bit to do hafrasha on later on. Not that you're leaving over the challah, you're leaving over dough, or leaving over bread, that is, you're going to do hafrasha from, right? That is that's the suggestion that's coming out here from this tour, slash the Beis Yosef. So, maybe just with a couple of moments, let's just take a look at that in Shulchan Aruch, and then we'll pick up with that next week. So in Shulchan Aruch here, and there's a couple of pages in a row, just because you see there's a lot of, there's a very long shach on one page and a very long taz on the other page. The Shulchan Aruch says, Chalas chutzlar shimutaris l'kohen tahor mikrei, it's called tahor, mikrei rishai l'achla imzar al shulchan echad v'sheinu midmas. He says, first of all, you're allowed to eat it with a kohen at the same table, meaning you're the kohen's eating it and you're eating at the same table. We're not concerned about mixtures going back and forth. Okay. Continues on, even if it gets equal, this has to do with Bittel, also saved for another time. And plus the Ramah says that some disagree with that, that's on Shin Chaf Gimel, about how much you need in order to be Bittel. If you go on page Kuf Mem Dalad, the Mechaber there says, Umutter levatla barov, v'ochla bimei tumaso. He says, first of all, you're allowed to do Bittel barov. You're actually allowed to, it sounds like, actively nullify it. Also something to perhaps to save for next week. V'yicholin litna l'kohen amaretz, and you give it to a kohen amaretz, and then the next page says v'ein b'mishum kohen mesayeh b'matzno sav shu aser v'im ratzel lechol tchila v'achar kach yafrish hachala. However, if you want to eat it first and then separate the challah in chutz laaretz, it would be mutter yidei she'ein ikra el midivrei avos. The whole thing is only midrabanan. Comes the Ramah and says, you need to leave a little bit over, that there is extra at the time that you do hafrasha, okay? about Isa Shani Lusha Bifne Atzma, Ema Frishan Chala Mi Isa Acher Shlomina Mukaf. He says that's only with this Chala that you are, you can only do it with the stuff you're eating now. But you can't say, oh, I made Chala, I made cookies at a separate time, I'm going to use that Chala for this bread. No, it has to be sort of considered all to be of one collection. Okay, there's a lot of moving parts here, so to speak. So well, let maybe take a break here and next, and we'll pick up Mirza Hashem with this sugya. This comes up, meaning a family. I remember when I was in yeshiva, someone told me this happened at his table. He realized like all of a sudden he's about to do a berachas hamotzi on Shabbos, and all of a sudden his wife says, "Oy gaval, I forgot to take off challah. I can't believe it. I just didn't do it." And like, okay, what do you do then? So this halacha does come up again. The difference in chutzlars versus Eretz Yisrael. And there's sort of a lot of sort of chakiras of introduction to Hilchos Challah is found contained within him, kneaded in. So maybe we'll pick up here next week, Mir Seshem, and we'll be able to do like proper introduction and work through the sugya appropriately. Okay, so stop here, and then we'll need to check on everyone else. Yeah.